Cricket on the brain 24/7, 365. Well, every Monday, Corbin Middlemass and ex-test opener Ed Cowan join forces on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
And I watch him bat and I think it's like Brian Lara on steroids.
Featuring the best analysis and biggest results.
We're not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this.
And the stories that have your cricket thread popping off.
So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that?
ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Because there's no off-season in cricket.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Spain are the champions! Spain have seized their second star! The kings of Europe have conquered the world!
In a tournament of individual stars, the collective excellence of Spain shone through. Was it a classic World Cup final? No. Did the best team win? Unequivocally, yes. Organisers juiced the pre-game and halftime show. Tom Cruise gave a weird speech. Brazilians Ronaldo and Ronaldinho escorted Madonna into the halftime show. Justin Bieber played Hallelujah. The Muppets played the drums. Shakira played the hits. Wayne Rooney described all that as crap. And there were parallels to the game because despite all the talent on the pitch, it was a grinding spectacle. Argentina oddly unambitious, and ultimately Spain landed a killer blow against a 10-man opponent in extra time. We have our champions. Tournament's wrapped. Let's unpack it. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Socceroos legend Mark Schwarzer with us one more time as we wrap up the World Cup final and World Cup in totality. Mark, welcome. Wasn't a classic, but I feel like we certainly very much got the most deserving winner.
I think we did get the most deserving winner, absolutely. And you're right, there's no way in the world that was a classic football match, but it was a very predictable one. Spain dominating possession, chances, and Argentina just trying to spoil anything and everything they possibly could. I think they paid the price for the tactics they employed all the way through this tournament. And the referee finally, I think, was a little bit more honest in some of their decision making and certainly on point with a lot of his decision making. Argentina in the end were just too ill disciplined.
It was so surprising to see them, you know, a team so stacked with talent, struggling to threaten the goal. I think ultimately they finished with two shots on goal to 20 from Spain, and there was none in regulation time. And I think none through the first sort of half of extra time even. Were you surprised to see an Argentina side, as I say, so full of talent, employing that sort of tactic and mentality to the biggest game in world football?
No, I'm not surprised at all. They've done it all the way through the tournament. So every time they've come up against an opposition, they've employed exactly the same tactics. They try and put you off the game. They get in your face. They always leave something on players. There's always a push. There's always a shove. When they go to ground on challenges, their feet always end up on top of the opposition player. They're trying to provoke a reaction. You even saw it when Marco Cucurella was trying to talk to Messi and that. And he had his hands somewhere near his nose, near his mouth, and they tried to claim that he was trying to hide and they wanted him sent off. I mean, that's just the tactics that Argentina have employed, unfortunately. You're right, they've got talented players, but that for some reason is the way they go. It has worked for them up until this point. And I think from anybody who's a football fan would have been delighted to see Spain win the World Cup because, you know, they're a side that play some really good football, have tried to play football today. They never got drawn into the tactics. They never tried to react. They kept their cool the whole way through, and in the end their persistence paid off and they deserved thoroughly to win the World Cup.
What was the key to Spain's excellence today? Because as you sort of alluded to, it was a dominant performance. Why were they able to take such control of this game?
They had obviously the vast majority of the control of the game because possession, I think their discipline in possession. They took a lot of care when they were in possession. And it was the only reason they didn't win the game by more is because of Argentina's delay and foiling tactics. And that was always breaking up play, bringing players down, pulling players. That's what they do all the time. So I think for Spain, they were trying to play their own game. It was hindered to play as good a game as they normally can play. And look, that's football. As an opposition, you try and find ways to break down the opposition. If you know you can't go with them head to head in terms of football, which Argentina can't, then you have to find another way to knock them out of their stride. They tried. Argentina gave everything to put Spain off, but Spain were just relentless in their discipline, their belief in the way they played. They were organized, they're fit, they're not a single player on the team is hiding. They're always open for a ball. They always want to be on the ball, the movement, one-touch football. Changes of pace, they've been very, very good at. Tempo of the game, they were very, very good at as well. And I think in the end, Spain, they would normally play a lot, lot better. It was just the spoiling tactics of Argentina that didn't allow it to breathe and become a really good game of football. But the best team won in the end.
You say the best team there, and I think that's something we can drive into because we've spoken a lot on this podcast about the various stars across all teams who have shone and elevated this tournament, but ultimately it's a team performance that seems to triumph. And there's almost parallels to Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League when you look at the way they've eschewed star power, albeit that team is still stacked full of talent. And ultimately that collective is so much more powerful.
It always is, always has been, I think. Certainly in the modern day football, that for me has definitely been the case. I mean, I know last time round Argentina won the World Cup, they had Lionel Messi, but I think his contribution to the overall game 4 years ago was far, far higher than what it is today. And that's only natural because of age. You saw the final was one game too much for them. Romero had to go off. Martinez had to go off through injuries. They looked physically out of gas. It was the first game they've had to play in sunlight during the day in this whole tournament. I think probably one of the only teams that have had that luxury. They found it difficult in the end to continue to go at the level they need to go to try and match a team of Spain's quality. Lionel Messi today, obviously, has been an unbelievable player in world football. He's had unbelievable moments at this World Cup. But I think as we've seen the tournament go on, he's kind of been less and less involved. Yes, he's played really key parts. The game in the semi-final, his key involvement in delivery on the ball. England fell away more and more. Space was created. Messi was on the ball. He created everything. We saw today the counter opposite to it, where, yes, they were down one man. They were trying to obviously put pressure on Spain. But what Spain didn't do is sit back. Spain put pressure on the ball right from the off. And then only on a very, very few occasions did Messi and co beat that press and were able to kind of create a decent chance. They had one or two decent chances, mostly from set plays. And again, that's all to do with the way in which they set up, the way in which they put the opposition off, and the diving, the pushing, the shoving that goes on constantly. And look, I'm happy for football. I'm happy that Spain were a better team overall throughout the whole tournament. Great football team to watch play. I'm happy that overcame the spoiling tactics of what Argentina were about this World Cup.
You touched on Lionel Messi. Spain's so effective at closing him down where other nations haven't been able to do that. The first man to captain his nation at three World Cup finals, in tears at the trophy presentation, and understandably so. Is there something to be said in the sense that we feel this might be the final time we see him at a football World Cup, aged 39 years of age?
Yeah, look, I feel that, I mean, look, he's obviously going to make his own decisions, but I feel like this is the end of the road for Messi at the World Cup. I might be proven wrong, but I look at his involvement in this throughout this tournament. He started very, very well, scored a lot of goals throughout the tournament, had moments in every game where he played. Today was probably the least impact he had on the game. And he's not the only one. There's a whole lot of other players in that side that didn't have an impact today. I just feel that he's at that point now where I don't know whether he could deliver the levels he needs to. Certainly in 4 years' time, I think highly unlikely. But that you need to, and for Argentina to be, try and contest for being world champions again in 4 years' time.
I was intrigued by the Enzo Fernandez red card. It came after that sort of injury time tackle on Pau Cabasi.
Oh, and that's a fair collision on halfway as well. Enzo Fernandez went through him. And Enzo Fernandez is walking.
Did you see that as a fair enough decision from the referee? Second yellow after an earlier one for, I think it was either dissent or it could have been simulation. It was sort of hard to know.
Look, I think if it's dissent or simulation, I can't remember either exactly what it was. I mean, that's disappointing, you know, for a player to get a yellow card initially and then to be sent off on a challenge, which I thought, I have to say, I thought maybe a tiny, tiny bit unlucky, unfortunate to get a yellow card in that instance. But he did go in quite heavy. Not that he lifted his boots or anything like that, but he went in with force. And that then creates the problem. And he was slightly, slightly late as well. So I can so see why the referee gave the yellow, being the second yellow card. He's an experienced international. You know, he knows what he's doing. Argentina's whole tactics are based on getting in people's faces, putting players off, putting the opposition off, trying to put people off their games. We saw Paredes when he came on. I mean, the guy is public enemy number one when it comes to coming on a football pitch and just trying to intimidate, antagonize, put people off, bring people down, provoke people. He ends up getting sent off after the final whistle as well. And you kind of think, well, I don't feel sorry for those sort of tactics. You live by the sword, die by the sword, live by the sword, die by the sword, live, you know, however you want to say it. And I think in the end, they suffered from their own tactics not working. And ultimately it caught up with them.
Tell me about the Torres finish. Like at a certain point, when you're failing to take your chances over and over again, when you have a goal almost effectively disallowed by the referee that looked like a very much could have stood, like I know that the whistle had sort of already gone. At a certain point, you're starting to wonder, is there a sense of destiny here for Argentina? Is their name just written on the trophy and the pressure that must have been building on this Spanish outfit? So to manage the finish so well from Torres, it was all class, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an excellent finish. It really was. I thought it was a good move from Spain. I thought Nico Williams did really, really well to get a header on it. It was under a huge amount of pressure from, I think it was Molina who came on at the far post. I mean, he tried to shove him out of the way and was unsuccessful. And Nico Williams managed to get a perfect header back in the path of Ferran Torres. And Torres's strike, you know, it's one of those ones. He just never looked like he was going to miss it.
Lamine Yamal, Pedro Porro, Williams, and thundered in for Spain by Ferran Torres.
We've seen him time and time again come on to games for Spain and make an impact and score. I think you look at Spain's, every one of Spain's substitutions had an impact. And I think that was also key when you look at the overall squad. They should have taken the lead earlier. Marino should have scored. I mean, it was an unbelievable chance, the header, the glancing header. So for them then to take the lead and again, fully deserved stats-wise, shots on goal. But you're right, the longer the game goes on, the amount of domination that you have, you don't score, there then becomes frustration, possible doubts creeping in. There was a moment where I felt, hang on, this is very dangerous for Spain now, because Argentina, what they've done really, really well, incredibly well this World Cup, is haven't given up. And that when you feel like they're gone, they find another way. And even though, you know, Spain was so dominating and so much better in so many elements of the game, at 1-0, you still felt like Argentina can get back in this game. And that's because what they've done it time and time again at this World Cup. So that element of their determination, spirit, you can't knock at all. You can definitely have an opinion and be critical of their approach to the game, which I'm definitely not a fan of. And I feel like Argentina could be so much better without that kind of approach. But in terms of their desire and their never giving up attitude, that's pretty remarkable.
It feels as though, from what you're saying, you feel like this is a wasted opportunity from this Argentine squad.
I think they tried to find a way. I think the managers obviously looked at his squad, looked at Messi, looked at players, how much impact, are they able to go toe-to-toe with Spain? And they decided on a tactical approach, which they've pretty much used the whole way through, and that's worked really well for them. You know, the England game, up until England took the lead and maybe about 4 or 5 minutes afterwards, Argentina looked dead and buried. But Argentina just found a way. You know, they found a way to, they did what they had to do, and they got great deliveries in the box. England dropped deeper and deeper and couldn't go with it. And Argentina deserved to beat England in the last round. You know, you could question cards should have been handed out earlier. I think the referee should have. Got away with so much throughout this tournament. And actually, arguably, the disappointment is that the red cards had to come in the World Cup final. If they were refereed better earlier, then I think there would have been a lesser of a need to use the cards in the final, because the muckers would have been set earlier on. I feel that Argentina, certainly out of most of the teams, were given a lot of leeway throughout the tournament in terms of how they played the game, how they tried to intimidate, how they tried to put players off and leaving something on everyone really all the time. That kind of put the referee today in a difficult situation.
So Spain, they now European champions and world champions. They become the first nation to hold the men's and women's crowns simultaneously. Inevitably, success leaves clues, and people tend to try to, I guess, copy what has been a successful blueprint. This isn't a federation that has been without scandal. Like, we know that they've had their share of choppy waters in the way that they've run their own federation. But I'm just wondering how this might impact world football and what the lesson is for other nations to Spain's dominance
Well, I'm sure people have done a lot of research into developing of players in Spain. Spain time and time again have developed phenomenal football players over the last 20, 30 years. I suppose from an international level, I think back in 2010 was their breakthrough in terms of putting a team together that was truly united. They had, part of their issues was the club rivalry was more fierce and more intense, and actually probably was detrimental to the national team's performances because of that rivalry and the hatred between certain teams and the players. And therefore, when they came together as a national team, they were never really truly united. Whereas since 2010, Spain have really looked like a united nation in terms of football, and the quality of players they've had, they've been able to find a common ground, common cause, and play well together and win things together. The quality of players have always been there. Like I said, it's more about harnessing and getting these players together and to play well together.
Incredible to think Kubasi wins young player of the tournament when you had Lamine Yamal doing the things that he was doing across the tournament and in that final as well. And it speaks to, I guess, what is to come with this outfit. Are you sensing like a sustained period of dominance from this nation?
Look, I think it's really, really hard to back things up. But if you look at this Spain side and you think, you know what, like, and the quality of players that, you know, missed out on this squad as well. And you think, right, actually, you know what, this Spain team could go on for a long time. They could continue, you know, to evolve, and there's no reason why they can't. And, you know, the self-belief they'll gain from being world champions, I can only imagine what that's going to be like. It's exciting times for Spanish football, and it has been for some time, but now to back it up again, winning the Euros, winning the World Cup is really, really impressive. Women's football is obviously, the development of women's football in Spain has been phenomenal from 2019 to 2023, has been like off the charts. In 2019, they were I don't even think they were a top 10 team in the world. And then all of a sudden, 2023, they're winning the World Cup as the number one team in the world. And rightfully so, because they were so much better than everyone else, tactically, technically, physically, everything about their game. And if you look at the team right now, the men's team, you know, tactically, technically, physically, they just outplayed the vast majority of teams. If you can do what they did against France, and kind of it was perceived to be comfortable for the vast majority of the time, that's impressive. I feel that they're in such a good place. It's only within the group that can probably break them up a little bit if they start to get a little bit ahead of themselves. But De La Fuente has done an unbelievable job. The players have been incredible. And, you know, I said before the World Cup, I thought France were the favourites, but Spain were always in the mix of being the world champions as well. And, you know, they're the ones that showed it. And they were the team that kind of almost slightly flew under the radar at times, but we're always there in the back of people's minds and always got a mention about look out for Spain.
The halftime show. I know you love a halftime show, Mark Schwartz. I got to pick your brains on this one. 27 minutes and 21 seconds of halftime. So halftime's only meant to be 15 minutes. That makes it longer than any stretch of uninterrupted play at this tournament as a consequence of those hydration breaks. It included Ronaldo and Ronaldinho escorting Madonna onto the pitch, the Muppets playing Seven Nation Army, Ted Lasso subbing in Justin Bieber.
It's the World Cup, hallelujah. It's the World Cup, hallelujah.
Shakira being Shakira. Wayne Rooney described it as crap.
I like a lot of them artists, but I thought it was crap.
Did we need it, Mark? Do we need a halftime show?
Does football need a halftime show? Do the fans need it? I don't think so. Do the players need it? Absolutely not. Is it good for revenue, sponsorship? Probably. And I know that, you know, the game needs to evolve, and it needs to, you know, be sustainable and all that. And I'm more than confident that football is sustainable. I would like to see it go back to normality after this. I'd like to see the next World Cup final not have a halftime show. Personally, I think in extreme conditions, hydration breaks are important, but you know, the other question is, should you then be playing in extreme conditions? Should you not be playing it at a different place, a different time of the year, like they did in Qatar, you know? So I think there's a lot of questions been asked. Obviously, this has been some real successes of the tournament. I think the 48 teams has worked really well, except it's been a really long tournament. And you think about players' health, burnout, all that sort of stuff. I mean, it doesn't leave a lot of time for recovery, for teams to get going again for their seasons, massive seasons. That's things that definitely need to be considered. But I feel like, you know, the talk is that it might even go to 64 teams, which would mean that surely the tournament goes even longer. And I just don't know how sustainable that is. How much longer do you want a tournament to go for? You know, if we keep extending teams to it, we might end up playing a tournament that lasts 6 months long.
It certainly feels like we're growing. Like, it looks like almost certainly we're going to go to 64 if you're reading the tea leaves from what Gianni Infantino is already telling us. If we look at this World Cup, just to finish up, when you think back to this World Cup in years ahead, how do you think you'll remember the USA, Mexico, Canada 2026 Football World Cup?
Look, I'll look at it certainly with fond memories, because I think it's been a really, really good World Cup. I think the quality of football has been excellent. I think, you know, the initiative in terms of refereeing to cut down on, you know, the whole player simulation, not buying into soft fouls being given, I think overall that's been a real success. I think the substitution rules, getting off the pitch, goal kicks, throw-ins, I think all that's been really, really good, really, really positive. So there's been a lot of positivity about it. I think, you know, the fans' reaction, the hospitality here in the US, where I've been based, has been incredible. I think we just need to get back to a little bit more core values of football and not get caught up in this whole thing of, you know, trying to make it bigger and better and draw out finals to be, you know, a couple of hours, well, 4 or 5 hours long rather than the normal, you know, 45 minutes each way plus our normal standard halftime break. And then if we need extra time and penalty shootouts, I mean, the guys have been playing for so long. It's tough conditions. They played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in New York, which is, it was pretty hot. There was not an inch of shade anywhere. There's no roof covering. It's hard going at the end of a tournament. You know, these guys have been working their socks off in very extreme conditions all over the three countries, whichever countries they've been in, you know, and the vast differences in climates and temperatures, they all play their part. The travel that most of the teams have had to undertake has been huge. So they're things I think that need to be certainly addressed and considered going forward and what the impacts have been. But overall, I think football has, you know, the World Cup has been amazing. I have to say, I think it's been really, really well organized in all three countries that I've seen and experienced. And I love the fact that, you know, football has been on the in the center stage of the world for you know, this period of time. But I think we've still got work to do as football evolves and people want to try and take it in different directions.
We've been so lucky to have you sharing it with us, being our man on the ground throughout this tournament across 7 weeks of breathtaking football. Mark Schwarzer, appreciate you making yourself available, being part of the ABC team across the tournament. Thanks so much. Safe travels.
Thank you.
A short postscript, or scripts really. Mark mentioned it in our conversation just there, but maybe worth going into a little bit more detail about Argentina and the carry-on after full-time. Leandro Paredes kicking and punching members of the Spanish squad, in particular Eric Garcia, in grim scenes that saw him red-carded after the game. Ugly is the word that comes to mind. Also, did you see Donald Trump? He and Gianni Infantino were booed walking onto the pitch for the trophy presentation. The US president handed the Spanish skipper the trophy and was then just lingering on stage, kind of hoping to be drawn into celebrations. That's the way it looked anyway. It was odd scenes, and Infantino was trying to drag him away to no avail. Something of a metaphor for the tournament in some ways. Okay. That is us done, not just for the World Cup, but for this podcast too. I'm so glad we got to cover this tournament for you as we sent the show out with the best sports tournament on earth. So much fun over the last 7 weeks. Thanks to Poppy Penny, not just for producing this episode, but just a mountain of work that she gets across in this project day in, day out, year in, year out. And of course, thanks to you guys for listening. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Thanks to SBS and the BBC for the extra audio used in this episode. Catch up.